Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
That is the voice of Matt LaFleur.
Yeah.
Who is known on this show as The Flower.
The Flower.
And he was asked what Ben Johnson said of Matt LaFleur. He made a point of saying in his introductory news conference that he enjoyed beating him twice a year.
And to be quite frank with you, I kind of enjoyed beating Matt LaFleur twice a year.
And so LaFleur concludes while he's playing to the crowd.
I don't think that Matt LaFleur and Ben Johnson know each other well enough to have gone to a Marquette game together.
It's funny.
It was a funny thing. And if
he didn't sound
little,
amused, though.
Well, I don't think he was.
And he kind of...
Word on the street was that Matt LaFleur was not amused.
LaFleur was much more vocal and happy because he knew he had the upper hand.
He always
now,
did. No,
now, with Ben Johnson, well, I don't know him.
Green Bay Packers.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. So much to discuss. So much happened. And Mr. David, I feel like we were right in the middle of it. I was back on a couch watching three TVs at the United Center.
Morning, Mully.
You're home away from home.
Happy
that
Wednesday.
Was fun, man.
It was fun last night at the Bulls game, keeping track of all the sports all the time. Very, very active evening, trying to keep track of the Bulls beating the Raptors easily. I think that was
easily.
An easy victory.
That was. They did that going
they
away.
They needed that.
They did. They needed an easy
the
game.
The Raptors needed that, too, frankly.
The Ramblers. The Raptors deserved it.
They did deserve
it. You'll take it and you'll like it.
Yeah, they did. And the Bulls now, they've got the rest of the season to improve their
standing?
Play, their standing, but they clinched a play-in spot.
Okay.
Last night, they clinched it. We were there to see history. The third straight year of the Bulls getting into the play-in round.
For whatever that's worth. I got to ask you, do you want to get that home game just so we can maybe get in a box again and watch three TVs?
We could try that. If the play-in game happens in Chicago, then we need to be there.
So, you know, just because we are who we are, very curious about what are the White Sox doing? How are they doing? Oh, the kid's gone four innings. He hasn't given up any runs.
We totally jinxed the White Sox.
There's where I was going.
Yeah, we totally jinxed the White Sox.
Oh, my God.
Things were going well until we decided to put them on the big screen inside the suite.
That's not fair. Things were going well until we figured out how to put them on the big screen.
I knew it was going to come back to me somehow.
It wasn't. No,
I was catching a lot of heat.
You weren't.
I was getting a lot. I was getting some, not going to lie, there's a little anxiety there. Like, pressure was on me to try to figure out the United Center televisions just because I'm supposed to know how to, you know, I didn't bring my antenna.
Ryan Porth jumped in and he made it happen.
He's a boss, you know. That's what he does.
I know.
He's a boss. He's a fixer.
But he literally turned it on in time to see the Shane Smith walk a couple guys. They take him out. I felt like the way they took him out, now, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I felt like Penn Murphy didn't get enough time to warm up. Like, they thought the inning was over or something. It just felt like he was being rushed onto the field, and then he was got off.
Well, if he was rushed onto the field,
maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe you can ask Will Venable about that at 9 o'clock. Because if he was rushed onto the field, then he was not amply prepared in the bullpen.
Thank you.
And frankly, he should have been because Shane Smith walked two guys to start that inning.
No. Didn't he get a couple of outs? When did he start?
Well,
the
he walks? Walked two guys. Maybe
he did walk two guys.
He walked two guys.
I also thought, David, on the first walk, that there was he struck someone out and they gave him a walk.
It was 5 2/3, and then he walked two guys.
Yes.
And then at that point, things got a little bit dicey. But I just wonder, going into the sixth inning, for a guy making his first major league start, I would think you would have your bullpen prepared.
I asked you, should they bring him out for another inning? Because he's a young guy who's gone five. You didn't hesitate.
Didn't hesitate.
And he had only thrown like 60 pitches.
That doesn't mean they don't have somebody ready. Bring him out.
Yeah, that's my point.
And you have... Craig Council would have Julian Merriweather ready.
I felt like Merriweather's always warmed up.
He's always warming up.
So much so that you can't use him.
But that was not a good inning for the White Sox. And Shane Smith, you felt bad. Now, the numbers look pretty respectable. Well, 5 2/3, great. 2 earned runs.
Because he walked the 2.
And he made history because he became the 5th White Sox starter to go 5 innings without allowing an earned run.
No team's ever done that in baseball.
That's remarkable.
First five through the rotation.
So the starting pitching for the White Sox, we can agree, one spin through is their strength.
Oh, without a doubt. Without question.
But I don't know if that's going to be enough to sustain things, because once they leave, things get dicey.
Well, that's very good. That's kind of both sides of town.
Well, the bullpen for the Cubs is an issue, but at least they have Big King Tuck to hit all the home runs.
Why is he doing well?
He's not only doing well. He's never done what he's done with the Cubs already. Four straight games,
right?
Yeah.
With a bang. Right?
Where's that contract?
Right? See, this is the problem. We talked about this before. Can you afford to get emotionally invested in him if he's a rental player?
I don't think you can help it. I don't think you're going to be able to help it. Cub fans are Cub fans. Fans are fans. When you have a player who is on the way to having the kind of season it appears Kyle Tucker is beginning.
Wow.
I don't know that you're going to check yourself. Well, that was really... Kyle Tucker homered for the 4th straight game last night, and that was really pretty serviceable and acceptable. No! No! It's like King Talk, bring it on! You want it? Come on, man! It's baseball!
I just think someone should cough.
'Tis better to have loved and lost than not to have loved at all.
See, is it?
Yes!
No, I don't think so.
Yes, I do!
There are a couple of women in my life I wish I'd never met. Okay. I don't know about you.
But I think it goes for baseball. You know, Kyle Tucker is worth appreciating, enjoying, as long as you have him. And who knows? I don't want to go down that route because that becomes – silly.
But are they going to pay him? No, they're not going to pay him. Every time he hits a dinger, I'm now like, how much is that going to cost?
This is the only thing.
Is he getting $500 million?
This is very naive, and it's more like being a fanalist right now. But as a fanalist for the Cubs, you could look at it this way. Perhaps Kyle Tucker will enjoy being a Cub as much as Cubs fans and the organization enjoy having Kyle Tucker here.
Yeah. I'm going to give you the chance to give me 400 million instead of 5.
Well,
wow. I mean, really? You like it here that much?
It depends on how they, that you can get creative with these contracts. It's way too early to start speculating what the size of the deal would be and how they would structure it. But Craig Council, hearing him talk about coming back to Wrigley, and
that's going to be fun.
You know, they play today.
Yes.
And Jameson Taillon goes 2:35 first pitch, 2 o'clock pregame right here on the Score on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network.
Can't wait.
I think that you hope that Kyle Tucker enjoys the Wrigley Field experience, the Cub experience, enough for it to matter when he's talking about and thinking about that next contract. Now, that is terribly naive and maybe unlikely, but it is maybe... Maybe your only hope.
That's pretty funny. If he gets the MVP award, does the price go up?
Yes.
Just saying.
Yes.
4 consecutive homers.
But as good as he's
pretty good.
As good as he's hitting not right now, and as hot of a start as he is off to, somewhere Ohtani lurks, and there are other people having bigger starts and better Marches or Aprils. Suarez hit a grand slam last night. He homered again. How many homers does that guy have? At least it wasn't against the Cubs. He homered against the Yankees, I believe. And Suarez is just having, I think he's got like 6 home runs.
Five homers, 11 RBIs.
Thank you. Tyler Farragut. Wow.
Right there.
All five of his hits this year are home runs.
That was quick.
He only has five hits, and they're all homers?
They're all dingers.
Boy, we talk about an all-or-nothing guy.
That's an all-or-nothing guy. But so there are other guys off to good starts. But Kyle Tucker, after a very, I think...
mediocre spring training.
It was less than mediocre. It wasn't very good. Yeah. He had one hit.
Well, it was a homer.
Yeah, it was a homer. He had one hit.
Just the one.
But now he's got four in four games, and he had four hits the other day. He did. And the Cubs are 4-2 on American soil.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
So they win today. Well, I don't want to say they're going to win today. I think I'm a little concerned. Not concerned, but Jameson Taillon, you'd like to see him have a good, strong start.
He didn't have a great start last time out.
That's fair. Justin Steele wasn't great last night either.
No. No, he's...
Given up unusual number of home run balls.
Is that three starts for him?
Yeah.
And they haven't been good?
I wouldn't say they've been...
I didn't say they were bad. I said
he's still rounding into form. I think he's definitely not as sharp as we've seen him.
No.
And you'd like to see him be a little bit more like the ace that he is supposed to be.
So the Bulls did win. That's a positive. When did the Hawks play you? They only got about five
tonight.
Games.
Play tonight.
How many
one.
Rookies are they playing?
They're playing six first-round draft picks, all selected by Kyle Davidson. And they'll probably all be on the ice tonight. And they have a bunch of those are defensemen. So they're loaded on the blue line. They need to get older and get better. But, yeah, they're in action tonight.
Did you see the story about Ove with the kid who signed from Boston College? I guess Boston College was eliminated, and he signed professionally, and he's to meet Washington for a game in Boston. And Ove, like, sends him a text, like, hey, why don't you come out for sushi with us, whatever. And the kid's there with all his teammates and kind of like, what is this? Like, and they're like, that's not Ove. Like, he's got this whole thing going. And then he ends up going out to dinner, sure enough, with him. And he's interested in where he went to college. They go back to some bar at Boston College, and they're standing around singing some horrible song.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, my God. The video of it was
hilarious.
You know, Ove, like, he's a legend, and he's about to set the record. He's also like an elderly gentleman with gray hair, and he's with these college kids.
Ove, if he's on a college campus, he looks like he's there for parents' weekend.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Because he's 41, I believe, but he looks like 41 going on 55.
Yes.
Yeah.
So. And he's at the bar, whatever the local is, at Boston College. It was hysterical.
Well, he is
in the midst of what he's doing.
And they're bringing in a kid that they just probably drafted last year.
Yeah, and they got tons of kids.
Yeah. Ovi's going to break the record.
He needs five.
I didn't think he would do it. He needs four to break it, three to tie it.
Four.
The Caps play the Blackhawks Friday night. In Washington.
That's it. That's
it could happen.
That is the game.
That would be something else.
He could get all four right there.
I was really doubtful that he would get this far because of the injury, just because of the age, and I never thought his record would be touched.
Not by a guy that can go to a pub in the middle of the season and sing you awful songs. I mean, I got to tell you, it was shocking.
It is funny. It's a funny story.
It's very funny.
Those hockey guys.
Too bad the Blackhawks don't have somebody that can take the young guys out because they got like six.
Well, they do. They've got Pat Maroon who's sticking up for all of the young guys in a fight. He'll pick a fight with you. And they have Nick Foligno who – those are guys that are, you know, they're not – of Ovechkin's caliber, but Pat Maroon's a good, proud veteran. He'll take care of those guys.
Take the young guys out.
Pat Maroon looks like the guy who you would run into in a beer league at this point of his career, and he still can handle the puck.
I saw him give his speech in the locker room, and he's kind of got half his equipment. He looked like a guy that was about to go play softball.
He looked like a guy that you'd run into at Johnny's West
exactly.
on a Wednesday night.
What did he say? Chubby but effective? That was his line?
Yes, chubby but effective.
About himself?
And he's
self-deprecating.
He's exactly right. He's self-deprecating. He's a podcaster. He's going to get into probably the media after he's done. And there's a lot to like about Pat Maroon. But he fits that
exactly
profile.
I love that. Yeah. It's something about sports. You know, I mean, Chelly would never be out of shape, but that's the kind of guy that would take the young guys, and you know what I mean? He just
Chelly
had that.
Would do that, but he would definitely he'd probably be better in better shape than the 22-year-old.
Oh, exactly.
He was taking
that
out for
is absolutely correct.
Yes. And if he and then he would take the 22-year-old to work out with him in the sauna on the treadmill and sweat profusely whatever they just drank the night before.
Oh, my goodness.
So Sox back in action today, trying to get back on the winning track.
Yes, but I'm worried about the weather. Do we have a weather report?
Well, it's 110. I think hail is in the forecast.
Hail?
No, I don't think it is, but it could be.
Can you get the sod father, Alex Kuhn, MVP? Can you just ask him and just give him a shout? He should be up. Let's hear from the sod father about whether they can play today.
Sean Burke, Pablo Lopez, first pitch, 110, if they play it, if they start
well,
on time.
I mean, I think it's all the weather stops by 2, right? Hasn't it been decided?
I think you decided that. I haven't seen that anywhere. Who knows what to expect? Let's just hope the grounds crew is ready. Just hope the grounds crew is ready.
Yeah. Well, they should be.
On Sunday, they were a little bit caught off guard, unawares.
Kind of like the bullpen yesterday.
Well, the bullpen should not have been unawares. They should have been ready.
Bullpen was pitching like the grounds crew.
But it was, it was a cool story for Shane Smith because he did pitch pretty well.
Great.
His family was there. It was a major league debut. And, you know, as a fifth starter, that's what you want out of your fifth starter. He went 5 2/3, gave up 2 runs, 3 strikeouts, 4 walks.
That's a great performance.
Serviceable.
But if they had gotten him out of there without the 2 earned runs, that would have been an even better performance.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
he kind of did his
maybe
share.
Maybe if you wouldn't have turned on the TV and jinxed him, we would be fine.
That's how it felt.
That was on you. I
feel like I wasn't the guy running around figuring out
how to get. Are you pointing the finger at me?
Everyone
You're
was.
You're blaming me.
You just admitted
Molly,
that.
There's palpable tension here.
Because you work there, everyone thinks that you know everything. And
I know. That's the thing.
That was hilarious.
Suddenly, I'm at the United Center in a suite, and everybody's asking me. I was pretty much serving drinks at one point.
You became the go-to guy on why it is we don't have the next channel.
And you, let me figure this out. I'm really like, not good at that stuff.
Oh, that was so funny.
Where's my Allen wrench?
But we did eventually. The problem was, you know, we changed, like the Bulls game was kind of on the first TV and you could hear it. And then you had the Green Wave, or the Mean Green, excuse me, Layla's team. Sad they didn't make the final of the NIC.
It's sad that both Layla's team, North Texas, and your team, Loyola, blew leads.
Sadder that the Ramblers went down. But either way, we were hoping that we would have a wager of some sort.
That would have been fun.
Would have been.
Are they playing in the third place game?
I don't think there's a third place game, and I don't know that counts.
No, that would be... That would be kind of futile to play a third place game. Most of these guys, after losing in the NIT semifinals, probably are already on their way to visits to see what school they're going to transfer to.
I am going to try to claim a cup of coffee off of Layla because her team was eliminated first.
Okay.
My team didn't get eliminated to the second game. So because we lasted longer
that's one criteria. Who blew the biggest lead?
Yeah.
Because both of them did.
It was a Rambler,
Loyola and North Texas, both at one point looked like they were going to be matching up.
Yeah. Oh, well. Things happen.
Things happen.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. So
now
college...
keep an eye on the portal.
Well, the portal is the story of every offseason now, because even if, you know, you could enter the portal and not go anywhere. You can just see what's out there.
Why did the girl from Notre Dame enter the portal? Wasn't
That's
that
a good out? Question.
Didn't that catch
Olivia
you?
Olivia Miles?
Yes. Didn't it catch you a little unaware?
I don't know enough about what's going on with that program to know, but I just thought it was
I thought we decided that was a really good program.
It was a very well-run program.
Yeah.
But you look at the Illinois big guy, he's going to Michigan. And
is that right?
Yes. You just don't know what to expect.
When did that happen? I'm going to need more.
Yesterday. I saw that yesterday.
See, this is the problem when you go to sporting events.
You can't keep track of all the sporting events.
I mean, seriously, I'm at a Bulls game trying to get the Sox game on. There's something wrong with
me. Morris Johnson decided to go from Illinois to Michigan because he wanted more touches. Does that mean, is that code for anything? Because if he wanted more touches, he's probably getting more money.
That's the kind of touch he wants.
Yeah, that's the kind of touch he wants.
I guess Dusty May features the bigs and gets them a lot of touches. Wolf and Golden.
Yeah,
I suppose
they had a nice run, but fell short.
That's an odd. I don't know enough about his background or his motivation, but it does seem financially driven, and it also seems like, what can you count on if you're Brad Underwood? A year ago, he's probably saying to the kid, you know, they got to the NCAA tournament. They were playing with all new players. It just, this is the kind of thing that drives coaches crazy.
Yeah.
And out of the profession.
Well, because now you got to replace someone. So you got to go find a guy somewhere else that you can bring in and give enough money that he can take over. So and you can do that. And it's done all the time. And I don't think we look at Brad Underwood any other way than, guys, put together a hell of a program.
Oh, I have a ton of respect for what he has to do year in, year out.
It's incredible.
College basketball is in trouble. That's not exactly breaking news. But when you see the kinds of things that these coaches are dealing with, and when you see the kinds of conversations we're having in the Final Four week, I don't know. Kevin Willard leaving Maryland for Villanova created quite a controversy.
Yeah.
Because he spent so much time talking about how his hands were tied and his athletic director was leaving and he loved Maryland, and all of a sudden he's gone.
I mean, he really, in retrospect, he really shouldn't have been. He kind of must have known that he was leaving, and he wanted all the fine people around that program, and there's a lot of good people around the program. He wanted them to know that it's not me leaving, it's what they're doing to me. That was just a bad look all the way around.
It seemed like a bad look.
Every time there was a microphone, he ran over and talked about
it. It seemed like it was handled poorly.
I agree.
And college basketball has several examples like that. So you wonder, you know, commitment is a fallacy in college basketball anymore.
Right.
It's just they're from players and coaches. And I know they both have the autonomy and they're empowered to be able to make their choices and move freely. But it just creates this atmosphere that's hard to follow. It's hard to follow. It's hard to get invested in. Now we have Final Four with all four number one seeds. The best of the best will be playing Saturday for the right to play next Monday night. One shining moment and all that. But it's a bit much.
You know, imagine being the athletic director at Drake. And you have done an extraordinary job of bringing in a couple of coaches that are so good they're now Big Ten coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not, and it's not one, it's two. It's one after the other, leaving you and getting, first of all.
Coach of Colorado State, too, Nico Medved. That's enough, three in a row.
That's
yes.
Three in a row. I mean, can you imagine what that feels like?
Well, the job description has changed.
I know.
The appeal of the job has been redefined because you may have envisioned being an athletic director at a place like Drake and maybe moving up the ladder yourself one day, but doing it because you hire the right people and you grow with them together professionally, you have all the success, and then maybe move on after 3 to 5 to 8 years. Not one.
I think
not one.
You know, what's happened now is that Brian Harden is doing such a good job. He is like his own search firm. Oh, who should we hire? Go get the coach at Drake. He's doing pretty well. Just keep taking those guys.
That's got to be frustrating.
That's what I'm saying.
It's got to be so frustrating.
Rough.
And you know, much the same way, that's what's going on with players and talent.
I agree.
Because it's the Drakes of the world, the Loyolas,
yes,
I hope not.
But I hope not.
Schools
but
of that
right.
size, programs that are considered mid-major, developing talent for the big guys, the teams that are landing 14 conference qualifiers. And so, you know, you get all the teams for the SEC making the NCAA tournament with players. Have they been at the SEC programs for 3 years? No. It's Transfer City. It's the state of college basketball right now, and it seems very chaotic.
Here's a good question. Someone asked, do you think their credits transfer, or do they even care?
I do not think they even care at this point.
Am I underwood or basketball weaving credits that – That's 3 hours of hard work.
How many
put that on the resume?
How many classes do you think that some of these people and players, student athletes in air quotes, are? How many classes do you think they've attended this semester? If they're leaving, hypothetically, Illinois from Michigan now, if they're leaving Drake for Iowa, whatever the case may be, how often do you think they've been actually in a classroom or via Zoom attending?
Right.
Class.
I would imagine that they have tutors and they're zooming it up. I would imagine that if you wanted to.
That's not education. That's a transaction.
But I'm saying if you were the kind of person that was thinking I need a degree, as opposed to the kind of guy. And Tim Doyle told us the story when he was at St. John's. The coach asked, how many of you guys think you're going to the NBA? En masse, hands raised, right? Mm-hmm. And you just look around the room and you're saying, okay, how many? There's like 10 of us that think they're going to the NBA. There are, you know, we're fourth in our conference. There are 300 teams in the NCAA. There are maybe 10 guys that are going to make a run.
Do the math. Like,
exactly.
Do the math.
No, you're going to Europe and you're going to Europe.
Not a lot of math majors in that group.
No.
You're stats.
You're not going to play in the NBA, mate. It's just, you know. Did you see yesterday, speaking of the NBA, Joker yesterday?
61 points, triple-double.
61-point triple-double.
And they lost.
In a loss. What the heck
Thank
is
you, Russell
that?
Westbrook.
What is that?
That's history. It's never happened before.
God,
there's
that's
never been
insane.
A 61-point triple-double before. So he's your MVP. I'll take SGA.
In a loss. I like SGA, and I think he's going to win it, but I think that let's be honest. The Joker
could win it every year.
Joker is the permanent MVP. They just can't keep giving him the award.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It's kind of like Jordan. You know, it's just somebody gets an MVP where you're like, well, we know who the MVP is. What are you doing?
That was something to lose that game, though, in double overtime.
Oh, my God.
To the T-Wolves.
Yeah, incredible. But you know,
was that on the fourth TV?
Everyone was asking David, where's the other television?
I don't work here.
You know TV.
I don't work here. Would you like another drink?
Sir. All right. We got a lot to get to. We got the pick six next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio. 6-7 to the score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
All right, guys, what did you think of Bears president Kevin Warren saying on Pro Football Talk this about Arlington Heights?
I mean, the interesting thing about it, there are not many spaces that can really handle a stadium. And so it is really down to the museum campus somewhere downtown in Arlington Heights. And so I'm interested. I'm excited about the new mayor in Arlington Heights. And again, being the largest landowner, we've made a lot of progress there with all the tax certainty that we've been able to get. But these stadiums are not linear. They're not a straight line. They take time to come together. Fortunately, I've been through this journey in Minnesota, and I'm excited about bringing it to life.
I think they're going to wind up in Arlington Heights is what he's kind of saying. I know he's not quitting yet on the idea of the lakefront, but he did say in that interview that there are a very limited number of places. He said that, you know, when he was hired, on his desk was the Arlington Heights project, and that he thanked Ted Phillips for putting all that stuff together. Now, obviously, he would prefer to be at the lakefront, but it feels as if no one's interested in giving the kind of money, making the kind of commitment that they would need to do so. The other thing that I always think about whenever I hear him talk about this stuff is that he has already set shovels in the ground by 2025. So this is the year that they've got to resolve this thing. I don't think it's coming soon. I think it's probably months off. But before the end of the year, they need to start figuring out what they're going to do, because every year that goes by costs more. That's how life is. And we've got tariffs on steel and, you know, who knows how out of control this thing can get. So they need to start building it, quite frankly.
Yeah, that was a pivot for sure. I remember about a year ago, I was actually filling in for Dustin the morning that there was the report out that the Bears were putting all their eggs into the museum campus spot, that they were going back downtown. They weren't thinking about Arlington Heights. And that was the message for several months. And now we're seeing him talk glowingly about Arlington Heights. Like, we got a beautiful piece of property here. There aren't very many places that we can put it. So I'm reading between the lines. I think it's fair to do so. And Kevin Warren is a very smart guy. He helped steer the Bears coaching search in the right direction because he knew the urgency of the situation. And he knows the urgency of this situation now of trying to get a dome stadium, which he said is 100% likely, underway, shovels in the ground, cranes in the air before the start of next year.
There were a lot of things that were interesting at the NFL owners' meetings as it pertains to the Bears and Ben Johnson and Ryan Poles talk, and we'll get to a lot of those later. This was the most newsworthy item. This was Kevin Warren, the Bears president, reopening the door wider to Arlington Heights. It was a pivot, it was a shift, and it was significant because they did reach a tentative agreement with the tax bill in Arlington Heights. It's down to $3.6 million now. Yesterday was the mayoral election in Arlington Heights. Jim Tenaglia, who the previous mayor, Tom Hayes, endorsed, won the job. They have now certainty there. They know who they're dealing with. And I think that when they know what they're dealing with in Chicago, it also makes it a lot easier to pivot back to Arlington Heights, where you own the 326 acres of land that he referenced. All the things and all the factors are pointing in that direction. Finally, maybe they will now get off this idea, this notion, this grandiose notion with all the lofty rhetoric that they're going to somehow build a stadium on the lakefront or in Bronzeville near the Michael Reese Hospital site. Yeah. That doesn't seem practical. No. This is common sense. This is the way they need to go. And Kevin Warren opened the door a little bit wider yesterday. So, yes, this was newsworthy.
It's a good question.
That the voice of Caleb Williams, also Jim Tenaglia, the name of the new mayor in Arlington Heights. Do you anticipate quarterback Caleb Williams will start getting comfortable being uncomfortable next year under center? Johnson's offense operated under center 56.2% of the time last year, the most in the NFL since 2020. That's more than twice as much as the Bears with Caleb as a rookie, at which was 26.4% of the time under center.
That's a really interesting approach. I do think it's necessary. I do think he needs to play under center because you need the play-action passing game to slow down the pass rush, just to be incorporated into your offense like they did in Detroit. Now, can Caleb Williams do this successfully? I think he can. It's about footwork. It's about bookwork. It's about getting ready physically, mentally, and just being more comfortable and fluid. Is that making him comfortably uncomfortable? It's all related. But I do find this also interesting. And I do understand why Ben Johnson is doing this. But it isn't necessarily consistent with what he said day one. He said day one he was going to have a blank playbook and everything about his plays and playbook would be around the skill set of Caleb Williams and of his players. Well, Caleb Williams is a shotgun quarterback. Okay, gang? He's a shotgun quarterback. And now we're hearing that he's going to...
Did you just go coach Ditka?
I did. I went whole Ditka on you. But he's taking the shotgun quarterback and he's making him into a behind-center quarterback. There's a difference there, and there's a shift there. I understand why, and it makes sense, but it isn't tailoring your offense around the skill set of your players. It's asking your most important player to change to fit the offense.
Yes.
Yeah, that's why I don't think it's going to be as huge of a jump as some may think. Is it going to get close to 56.2%? No way. Because the quarterback he was working with at that 56.2% was Jared Goff, who is a completely under-center play-action quarterback with a lack of mobility. And so I think that number could get up maybe closer to 36, possibly 40%. They want him to be able to play in structure more and learn the basics of being under-center because he has to be. But I do believe, David, that there will be some adjustment. And if he feels like that Caleb Williams is more comfortable in shotgun, which is obvious, actually, I don't think he's going to deviate from it completely. And I don't think that we're going to get anywhere near the under center rate from Ben Johnson's offense in Chicago that he had in Detroit.
I find that fascinating because, you know, the whole comfortably uncomfortable thing is really interesting because it's about kind of, you're right, David, it's about players adapting to coaching instead of the other way around. Now, what Ben Johnson did last year was run play action more than anyone else. And what the Bears did last year was not run any play action. I think there's a great chance to run play action, to improve your running game that way, to open up things by doing that. I have no problem with them trying to do it. But as you say, I am not sure how comfortable the quarterback is under center. I imagine that they're going to get together and they're going to be running at this camp coming up. They could run under center. They could just operate under center, not use the shotgun nearly as much, maybe not at all, as a message to the kid that this is something you are going to have to adjust to. But I think the guy had the number one offense in the NFL. I think he's on to something. I just don't know if he can get Williams to a point where he can operate out of that as easily as you want him to. It felt like last year, and again, a lot of differences, different center, different line, but it felt like Williams did not enjoy, or it looked like they weren't successful unless they were in shotgun.
I know it had to be a question I'm going to have to ask my mom.
That the voice of Jaquan Brisker, as Ben Johnson revealed yesterday that Brisker is cleared from concussion protocol. So how should the Bears approach the safety position in the draft? Can Brisker be counted on?
You know, listen, I'm really glad he's healthy. I'm really glad he's back. I'm also taking a safety in this draft without question. I just feel like, you know, he's one hit away. It's been three consecutive years that he struggled with concussion problems. It's the way he plays. He's such a tough player. I don't know that you can... I would say the trend is your friend, and it is more likely that this is going to reoccur than not. So I think you have to be aware of that. You have to support him. He's your player. You got to make sure he's doing fine. I don't know how you change his game if you can. Let him have I think he should stick with the helmet thing. You know, I know people don't like that, but if it can help, use it. I just think, yeah, I would also make sure I drafted a safety. I got to tell you, like, when it comes to the draft, to me, a lot of the information given about injuries, including Braxton Jones, tells me they need to use that 10th pick on a left tackle. And then later in the draft, they need to get a safety.
Yeah, just from a human aspect, I'm pulling for Jaquan Brisker.
Yes.
I've seen people go through brain injuries. I have a good friend who had a really horrific TBI, and it's disastrous. It's heartbreaking, and it's life-altering at times. And first and foremost, I want him to get healthy. And not only in the short term, but the long term, think about himself in that light. But I hope he comes back next year, and I hope that he is an all-pro caliber safety. But having said that, the Bears have to do what they have to do, and they have to draft a safety. And if they trade back in the first round, I think that there will be some safeties there that they can consider. I'm not saying they have to do that. That's just another possibility. Wouldn't be upset if they were to do that. And they just don't have a whole lot of depth at that position. And like you said, Mully, if he goes down early next year, you're in a position like you were down the stretch of being a man down at that position.
Hurt their team.
I'm really surprised they didn't sign a veteran free agent. I think that's almost one of those areas, as much as we got excited about who they did sign, that remains significant who they didn't. Because they're in a position now where it's nice to see Ben Johnson announce that Jaquan Brisker is coming back and he's cleared, but I don't know what that means, and I don't know for how long, and nobody really does. And if they tell you differently, I don't know that you can trust that, because you have the weight of his history, unfortunately. Bears have to find either a veteran free agent at this stage of the offseason, or they need to draft somebody, or both. One or the other. Likely, they're going to draft. If they trade down from 10 and they get another additional pick or possibility of a day one type contributor, then that would be the answer. If not, then you got to think having four in your top 72, if you are in a position where you still have to trust Jaquan Brisker, they're going to take a safety. And it would make sense that they do that because you can't ignore his unavailability over the last several years, no matter how committed he sounds in the locker room or how committed he seems on Twitter. You need to be ready for plan B.
I mean, I think you asked like four questions there.
That the voice of Craig Council with Kyle Tucker homering in four straight games. Is it time to start investing some real emotion in this guy? Or do you recommend that Cubs fans temper their emotion since every bomb brings him closer to a new deal that the Cubs won't pay? Could he be an MVP?
He could be an MVP. He could be an MVP. Through six games now. No, wait. They've played eight games now. They're 4-2 on American soil. I'm just going to refer to it that way. I'm going to pretend like those Dodgers games never happened. But through eight games, here's Kyle Tucker's average. 353, four homers, 11 runs batted in, 12 hits. This guy is everything early that you thought he would be. If this continues, how does that go? Not investing real emotion. Like, great hit, Kyle. That's a great walk-off. Congratulations. No! Who does that? Who's suggesting? Who wrote this question?
Had to be you.
It had to be me. No! How can you go through this season as a Cub fan and not invest real emotion in Kyle Tucker? That's easier said than done. It might be easier to do that so that you're not stung when he walks away and goes to the Yankees or the Dodgers or the Mets. That's not going to happen. I'm going to delude myself into thinking they still have a chance to sign him at the end of the season because Wrigley is going to work its charm. The ivy, the beer and the sunshine and the quaintness of Wrigley Field is going to convince Kyle Tucker, this is where you belong.
Yeah, you should invest all the emotion because if you don't, you're resigning yourself to the fact that, yeah, you can't keep great players in your dugout, in your building. It is very simple to me. You have a player like this still in the prime of his career. Whether it's in Major League Baseball, the NFL, NBA, you try to keep them around. And if you can't, then we have that discussion afterwards. But to look at what he is doing right now and then just to sit there all season and be like, oh, God, every home run. Oh, nope. There's another home run. We're not. He's gone. He's gone.
Paycheck.
That is bad. That is bad for your mental health. Don't do that.
This mean-spirited question was framed as if Chicago was Kansas City.
That is so wrong. This mean-spirited.
We were talking about
question.
Crochet yesterday too, in the same light.
Exactly. This is not a mean-spirited question. This is, you know, for those of us who've been hurt before, this is just a reminder that it's a temporary thing.
Fleeting.
As much as you're loving it, you're also aware that every game inches him closer to free agency where he's going to expect a lot. And the Cubs do not look like they're going to be able to pay it for whatever reason. Mainly, they don't want to pay it. So, I think it hurts. I think you're setting yourself up, David.
I know.
For some real pain here. And as I watch you, I want to help you.
Well,
and I think that,
I appreciate that.
You know that this is real and that there is a one-year deal.
And
here you are.
I know all those things.
Investing so much emotion.
I know all those things. And still, yet I am.
You don't even like the question. You get angry about the question.
I'm a sucker for Tucker.
I'm a sucker for Tucker. That's beautiful.
Yeah, great question.
That's the winner.
All right, guys. How would you evaluate Shane Smith after his first Major League Baseball start for the White Sox? And have the Sox played well enough to justify a trip to the ballpark today for the series finale against the Twins?
Well, okay. I think I'm going to need a box where I can watch multiple sports.
Brooks, get on that.
I gotta be able to go to a sporting event in the stands again. I'm utterly ruined.
Brooks,
I'm ruined.
Molly needs a box.
You know, I worked here, and we had a box at the ballpark when we had the White Sox, and I would take my kids who were very young to a couple of games. They went to, I think, 3 baseball games, and their first experiences were all in a box. And then I went and took my daughter with me to a football game and sat in the stands. And she was very young. She was like maybe 9 years old. And I said, hey, so what do you like better? Do you like football or do you like baseball? And she said, well, at football, you have to sit outside and it gets kind of cold. At baseball, you got the glass in front of you and there's the temperature. And I was like, that's not true. None of that is true. I have ruined you.
Nice job, Dad.
But yeah, it was a disaster. And I like grabbed my head like, what kind of, I just got lucky to get a couple of invites to a box. At any rate, that's what's just happened. We went to the game on Saturday. I had a blast. We went to the game last night. I had a ton of fun. And I now want to keep doing it. Like, I'm thinking, like, hey, this is kind of good. I don't mind this at all. But we're literally at the game inside watching 3 TVs.
Yeah.
And I kind of, like, if I could do that again, I think I need to do that permanently.
I think that's,
it's like one
of the, spoiled.
I went out with a guy that it was you wouldn't believe how this guy lived, and he ordered a bottle of wine, and I was like, no, I'm okay. I don't want any wine. I'm just going to stick with the water. And the guy's like, what's wrong with you? This is the best, you know, you'll never taste a drop of wine like this again. And I said, yeah, that's the problem. Like, I don't want to have a sip of an $800 bottle of wine because I don't want to be longing for it.
I think it's too late, Mully.
It's like the Kyle Tucker problem.
I think it's too late.
The same thing.
I think it's too late.
But, yeah, I think that somebody made a mistake with Shane Smith. He should have gotten out of that thing without giving up any runs. I feel that's a pity. And then that inning ruined the game, and then the Sox lost the game. But they're getting great starting pitching, and I would love to go to the ballpark. This question today is about the weather.
Yep.
I mean, can we get there and get the game in? But I'm willing to go for sure.
I was watching in the first inning, and he struck out, I believe it was Carlos Correa, on a 92-mile-an-hour changeup that must have moved a foot. Just must have had that run action in on Correa.
Wow.
I'm like, wow, this has got to end up on Pitching Ninja, right? Like, he's got to pick this up. Sure enough. It ended up on Pitching Ninja.
Wow.
He's filthy. Another nasty arm for a young arm for the White Sox, and something to be excited about. So it was exciting to see him have that kind of stuff. But yeah, I wish he would have come out in the fifth inning, and we'd still be talking about a 28 inning scoreless streak for the White Sox starting pitchers.
I get why he went back out in the sixth. I think that made sense at the time. He still had a pretty solid major league debut. I loved having his family sit in their own section, essentially.
That was cool.
They were all there, and the empty seats surrounded them. And it was one of those nights where, you know, obviously not a ton of people at the ballpark. Didn't matter because it was a proud moment for the family. And certainly he rose to the occasion. He was strong. You go 5 scoreless in your first ever major league start, and you
great
can feel
job.
Very good about
yep.
that. And more importantly, I think we'll talk to Will Venable at 9 o'clock. He should feel good about his place in that rotation. They do have to keep him. They do have to keep him as a Rule 5 guy.
I mean, your urge is to send him to Birmingham to be with that pitching staff.
Right.
Because they're all going to come in.
They're all going to be here eventually in the same bus.
Yes.
But the Sox are, you know, we're 5 games in. One spin through the rotation. Worth watching. Worth watching because they are pitching well. Last night, things got away from them in a little bit. Today, they can still win the series. That's the way you got to look at it. Day game, win the series. Keep the hail away. Get the sod father.
Get the hail away from me.
Get the hail away from the weather. Hopefully, the sod father has the field ready and the grounds crew's ready and the bats are hot.
No, I'm going to finish the question. The question is this.
Do we bring the Bulls good luck yesterday night? is support from Score staffers all that this team needs to put them over the top? Or do the woeful Raptors deserve even more credit?
I'd like to give credit to Molly. I'd like to give credit to Mitch and Kevin and Layla and Porth Shade, and Shane yeah. and Ray Diaz and Jenna. All those people that yes. were there and had fun last night. But no, this had more to do with Coby White rebounding and celebrating his Player of the Month award.
How about that?
By looking the part.
Yep.
And the Bulls, I got chastised, made fun of for having a reaction to Zach Collins playing some basketball. I was complimenting Zach Collins' play and was made fun of. But Zach Collins is the kind of guy that came through last night. So no, Vooch had a double-double. How about Talen Horton-Tucker? 27 points off the bench.
Incredible.
27. So that was a fun game to watch. And no, I don't think we had anything to do with it.
You guys had everything to do with it. You were second on the list behind the ever-consistent Coby White, the Eastern Conference Player of the Month.
I would say, though, could I nominate Molly for the Eastern Conference Fan of the Month?
Yes.
Just the week, Eastern. I think.
Okay, Fan of the Week.
Totally the Bulls were 9-6 in Molly's month of March. But 28 points. He averaged 28 points for the month of March, and you got to give him his flowers once again. And he should have been the most improved player last year. He's made probably as big a step in going into this year as he made going from going into last year. So he continues to get better, and he continues to show that he's a piece to build around.
Yeah, I mean, this obviously is a joke that we had anything to do with it. We happened to be there. That's coincidence. I do feel, though, that you're more emotionally invested when you're going to games. And I got to tell you, that is a product worth watching. It's fun. They do get up and down the floor. They're a really fun team to watch. Coby, you are so right about that. He should have been the comeback player, the most improved player a year ago. But it's hard now to give it to him. But you're right. I think he's gone from, like, prominent starter to all-star status. But there's another level. There's another level, which is like the real rare great players in that league. I'm very curious if he can reach that next level. I mean, I have no idea what that feels like to be running up and down the floor with his hair going everywhere. And now he's able to kind of attack the basket, something that he didn't really do a lot of. He's able to score in different ways. We knew when he got here that he could shoot. We knew he was a scorer because he was the North Carolina schoolboy legend. He led every scoring thing. When guys have that knack and then they can develop into a more all-around player, that's how you become a great player. But Coby has one more step. I don't know if he can hit it, but boy, would that be awesome.
It would be.
All right. We've got the extra point next. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Bears general manager Ryan Poles made a point yesterday that the draft was pretty wide open and Daywood and talent could be found in the second round. He also had this to say about what he wants from as far as toughness from his number one pick.
To me, it comes down to toughness. We're looking to establish an identity to kick this thing off and really get this team going in the right direction. We've been able to make some really good moves to set us up, you know, with O-line and D-line. And that puts us in a position to attack the draft, you know, with kind of a best available mindset. So we're excited about that.
What do you make of this?
So a couple thoughts, one big picture, one detailed thought, but I think big picture-wise, I like the fact that Ryan Poles was at the NFL owners' meetings and spoke, and he was on SportsCenter, and he said some things that people were very interested in, but I don't think that he was the dominant voice representing the Chicago Bears, and I think it's been that kind of offseason, and I think that plays to his strengths a little bit better than him being the front man. I think he's a guy that probably operates best when in the background. I don't think he's got that kind of personality that embraces the opportunity to project and present and to be what Ben Johnson has become already. Ben Johnson's a front man for the Bears organization, and he plays that role very well. Ryan Poles much better, I think, making decisions behind the scenes, playing a secondary role in terms of being the chief spokesperson. That said, about the what he said about the draft is very interesting, worth paying attention to. If that is true, and there's depth between 15 and 45, and 10 isn't necessarily much different than maybe 15, trade down. You might be in a position to trade down, and it keeps that door open to do that, because then you can accumulate assets and maybe an extra body and an extra starter. So I think you open the door to that possibility, maybe intentional, but it's worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah, it was interesting. He had some good things to say about Karan Amagaji, and a lot of people took that as, oh, well, that he's not going to take a left tackle at 10, and then he comes out and says that there's a lot of day one talent that will be available in day two. Maybe I'm reading between the lines too much, but there are a lot of tweener-type offensive linemen that you look at and say, day two, you could be in a position to take them. But I think that that's a lot of positions. I think that's along the defensive line. I think that's in the defensive backfield. I think that there are guys that you could look at on the offensive side of the ball, like at running back, where you don't get an Omarion Hampton or Ashton Jeanty, but Quinshon Judkins out of Ohio State looks like a real good weapon that they could use, or even Devin Neal if you're looking for a between the tackles runner out of Kansas. So I agree with him on that point. And yeah, I didn't read between the lines a whole lot on what he had to say, other than his unwavering support of his tackle position, because a couple months ago he said there would be competition at left tackle for Braxton Jones, and then yesterday he sort of insinuated that it would be from Karan Amagaji.
Yeah, I think that the Bears have done a really good job. They have signed five starters on the line of scrimmage, the middle of their offensive line, and both an end and a tackle for the defensive line. That is a great start in my world. It is not the completed project. And I think that he's bought time, especially on the offensive line. But I am still of the conviction that they should draft a left tackle at 10. And then they should make sure one of those two. I think the positions they got to go after are defensive and defensive tackle, pass rusher, whatever way you want to term it. But a defensive difference maker in the middle of their defense, they need an offensive lineman. They need a left tackle. And I would try to get another guard or center or a player that is in the position to kind of step in when one of these guards proves that they're not going to be long-term answers. Neither guy is a long-term answer. So I think they need to start building up that quality and depth so they can just seamlessly move forward, and it won't be anything that the quarterback has to worry about. So at the beginning of the draft, I want him to go line of scrimmage. And that's what they did. And I don't think it bailed them out. I don't think they have any leeway to.
You don't necessarily mean consecutive picks. You just mean, okay, so they got four in the first 72, three in the top 41. You mean two of those three you'd like to be committed to the line of scrimmage?
To the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. Two of the first three?
No question.
That makes sense. That still leaves you room to draft either a running back or a safety an edge rusher.
Yes, you can have whatever fun you want to have, and you can do whatever you think is going to make you, here we got a little extra oomph here. Fine, but the priority to me remains the line of scrimmage, and they've just signed five starters on that line.
Do you feel like, this is, we got a month until the draft to kind of weigh this, but do you feel like if there is a deep enough tackle draft that if they, with their first three picks out of the 41, as long as they end up with a left tackle in that group, that's okay with you? Or does it have to come at 10?
You know, I gotta look closer at it. But from everything I've seen, and just from the reality of the NFL, you find your left tackle in the top 15 picks.
That's the answer you I think keep coming back to, and I agree with that. I just wonder if they feel like either Jenty or Warren are there, and they feel like they are the guys they can't miss on because they will regret it. Then you justify or you rationalize that you can find your left tackle with your second round pick.
And I'm not arguing any of that, David. And they may, if you get like Warren, may be a offense changer, a game changer type player, the kind of tight end that you have right now in Detroit. Frankly, that kid's a great player, and if he can, if you envision it, you can see it, and you can make it happen. I got no problem with it. But and that also is actually going to help you a little bit on the line of scrimmage. But I think that their obsession, what did the Eagles do? How did they win a Super Bowl? They had a great defensive line, and they added to it. And they traded up, and they got a great player.
I thought it was because of the tush push.
It's all it comes down to the tush push. Hey, how about
we should
that?
Talk about that.
16-16.
Having Jason Kelce did not keep them from drafting Cam Jurgens.
There you go. And then what happened?
They won a Super Bowl with Cam Jurgens.
Come on now.
That's an MVP caliber contribution there.
Right there, MVP there. Jumps there.
Nice point, Alex. See? You're right. They had Jason Kelce, and they still draft. Your point, too. I'm used to you making those kind of contributions. I'm giving Alex some props. Nice job.
I am. What's the Jerry Angelo? I am obsessed with the quarterback. I'm obsessed with the line of scrimmage.
You're fixated on the line of scrimmage.
I am. Any player, I think, can upgrade that. I'm going for
it. I don't think that's a bad way to go. I would want to build my team that way.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I still think they're building their team is my point.
Let's listen to, when we come back, along those lines, where last year's offensive tackle they drafted fits into their plans potentially.
Okay, we'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw, 312-644-6767, Chicago's greatest sports radio show in the morning. Can I say it? Nah, I really don't like going on about ourselves, but man, did we pull the bulls through that first canalette yesterday. David is tearing up sheets on boiling water, and we made that happen. Mully and Haw on the score.
Mornings with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
I like Caron a lot coming out last year. He was a guy that we had earmarked as a potential developmental prospect. He had a lot of great traits to work with. I don't know if the vision last year in Chicago was for him to have to play so quickly, but we're kind of forced into that spot, and so had some ups and some downs, just like you would normally think for a rookie lineman, much less one that you thought was going to take a little bit more time to get playing at a high level. So we're not discouraged at all by what he put on tape. He got put in some tough situations last year, and I know Coach Rochard was really, really excited to be able to work with him. So,
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That is the voice of the man of the hour, Ben Johnson. Everybody wants to hear anything Ben Johnson says, and he's willing to talk to everybody.
What he says, I think, drowns out all the other noise.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the wrong way to describe it. It's not noise. It's all the other rhetoric at Howell's Hall.
It cuts right through stuff.
It does, because his opinion is going to matter the most. Karan Amagaji, somebody that they drafted in the third round out of Yale.
Injured.
And that's maybe why.
Leg injury. Yeah.
Well, whether it's coming out of Yale in the Ivy League or the fact that he came pre-injured, it was going to be a developmental season until it wasn't. Until he was needed, until he was thrust into action against the Vikings and exposed. And you left that game feeling like he wasn't ready for prime time. And you wonder what impact it had on his psyche and his confidence, and you wonder what it had in his role and, I think, status in the organization. Now, they're in a position to...
It's a new organization, and they come in, and now they... Listen,
new coaching staff, same general manager.
Do you know what he is?
What is he?
Traits guy.
Okay, he's a traits guy.
And that's not an insult, but he said that when he was describing him. Oh, you know, look, I think if you're a coach.
Look at his frame.
Look at the feet.
Look at the feet. Look at the footwork. Look how good his feet are.
Oh, my gosh. Look at how big he is.
Look at the arm length.
Look at that.
Look at the arm length.
No one's wondering.
Oh, my gosh.
He's that little alligator arm.
He's not Will Campbell, but he is also a guy that now, unfortunately, has bad tape. He's got bad tape as a rookie.
That's fair.
But he's got still the general manager that drafted him, supporting him, and Ryan Poles had this to say about Kieran Amagaji yesterday.
Yeah, and then you throw, you know, Kieran in the mix, who, you know, not only do I still think, you know, highly of him, especially going back and just watching, you know, the Washington game, there's a lot of signs of him being successful, especially the tackle position. But then he also went through a tough spot, which was, you know, the way it was set up was unfortunate. Minnesota wasn't a great outing for him. So, but there's only a very small sample size there. I know that competition is going to, you know, make the best of both those guys. But I think it makes us really ask tough questions when we're watching specifically like a left tackle. Like, is this guy going to make us better in year one, year two, year three? How do we feel about our guys? Especially in the case where, you know, Dan and Kyle and Declan really haven't had time with either one of their tackles. We've got to see how it plays out, too. There could be, you know, if we have two, three guys that we think are in that spot, they may not be there at 10 either. So we'll be ready for all the different situations that can pop up.
Interesting.
So
sounded like he was thinking about drafting a left tackle.
It did sound like that. And if he does, then you wonder if Kieran Amagaji would be moved inside. It also sounded like that.
And I got to tell you know, again, I'm really pleased that we didn't hear if Kieran was in this draft, he'd be a first round pick.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You don't like to hear
you
that.
You get that a lot from guys.
But you get that a lot from guys.
Had he not been injured when we drafted him, he would have been probably taken third.
It does bear remembering, though, that. Yeah, it's a good point. Amagaji and Austin Booker were two guys they drafted who were traits guys that you didn't expect a lot of production from, and they were more developmental in theory. And Now you've got the chance to develop those players who are still fine athletes. And Booker and Amagaji may be facing similar type of plans as they enter their second seasons.
They may be guys that can contribute in 2026.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they may be guys, like, obviously, both young guys. I think Booker even younger. And you look at a guy like that, and man, he can do some things, but he's got to get more developed.
Yeah, you wonder if he's going to be in a position where he has to contribute sooner than that, depending on what they do in the draft with an edge rusher. And you'd like to think that he would be a guy that was a fifth rounder last year.
Yeah.
And would be ready to behave.
Part of the wave of defensive guys, yeah.
The expectation should be like a second rounder this year. But a lot more to come for those two guys. Yeah. Interesting to hear them discussed yesterday.
But we'll get to it. We got to get to a break. But I think that when we look at this idea of competition in camp, I don't consider Kieran Amagaji competition.
I don't either. Braxton Jones' job to lose unless they draft somebody, and then that'll be the competition. Yeah, let's talk about that next. And some of the rules changes.
Oh, the rules changes are glorious.
Got to get to those.
It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.